Well, it's been said before, and it will be again, I suppose. We live in turbulent times with questions of identity occupying such central focus and divides between types of citizens, the so-called anywheres and the somewheres. Now, whether or not this is entirely rational isn't the point. It's there in the vibe. And I wonder if this also equates to a rise in anti-Semitism as experienced in the US, UK, Europe and in Australia. Remember that Melbourne protest earlier this year with the Queensland Independent Senator Fraser Anning present, where some people openly sported, proudly apparently, Nazi insignia. In troubled societies, do old prejudices resurface just when everyone thinks they're obliterated? This is just one of the questions to put to my first guest this hour, who's made her big reputation delving into obvious and implicit anti-Semitism and for following this down many intellectual alleyways, however twisting. Deborah Lipstadt is Doro Professor of Modern Jewish History and Holocaust Studies at Emory University in the US, known for her seminal work on the trial of Adolf Eichmann, one of the architects of the Jewish transports in World War II. Her latest book, Anti-Semitism Here and Now, plunges into contemporary anti-Semitism, though always with an eye to history. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Hello there, thank you.
Yet amidst the rise of this prejudice, Deborah Lipstadt, the difficulty is, you say, that there's no one clear definition of anti-Semitism. So how do you try to bring some rigor to this, let alone the rest of us try?
Well, I think there's a template for anti-Semitic charges, just as there's a template for every prejudicial charge. If you're engaging in racism, for instance, in my country, the United States, against African Americans, you use terms, these are the prejudicial stereotypes, shiftless, lazy, gang-related, welfare queens, all sort of things that imply, you know, this is the stereotype of African Americans. So every group, there's certain stereotypical things that are a trigger that you know right away that this is what the attitude towards a particular group, the derogatory attitude. With Jews, it's three things. It's connections to money, it's power, or they are smart, they're more conniving, and it's nefarious use of those smarts and nefarious use of that power to harm others for their own benefit. And any anti-Semitic charge will include generally at least two of these three items. So it goes back, there was a Supreme Court justice in the United States who was talking about pornography. And in his decision, it's a famous statement, he said, "I can't define it, but I know it when I see it." We can define it. It has these elements. And when these elements are there, those of us who study it know it when we see it.
I suppose it just lends itself to claims that you're being subjective. I know it when I see it, you know, if you can't enumerate it and articulate it.
Well, you can articulate it. There's a persistence, there is a structure to it. And again, going back to those elements, the Jewish control of some sort of industry, or the Jewish, when it is a Jew involved, it becomes the Jews, that the Jews are doing something to harm us, that the Jews are only interested in one another. You know, it's a conspiracy theory.
So it's this slip and the slippage that I think you write about.
Yes, exactly. It's a conspiracy theory is irrational. You know, a conspiracy theory is a way of explaining something that you don't quite understand, and usually something that maybe has harmed you, maybe has changed your position in society. So if I were to say my business has collapsed because the left-handed people were out to get me, people would look at you as if you're crazy. But if I say, oh, it was the Jews got into this business and suddenly I lost all my business, people say, oh, yes, I recognize that. I'll give you an example. It's sort of like a herpes virus. It's a terrible comparison, but anti-Semitism is pretty terrible. But once it was in your system, what was in your body, it was there and it lay dormant, but it would come out at times of stress. Anti-Semitism is like a herpes virus.
So you do believe, do you, that it goes hand in hand with turbulence, with societies that are troubled or going through turbulence or massive disruption?
Even not so massive, or individual, society, individual, local. You want someone to blame that the person to whom you're speaking or the audience to whom you're speaking, that this blame will resonate. it may be apocrypha, but it is said that Jews in Germany in 1930s used to tell the following joke, that a Nazi official comes to a rally and he's going on and on. The Jews are our misfortune. The Jews did this. The Jews did that. Whatever. Suddenly, someone yells out from the side of the room, and the bicycle riders. And the person speaking turns to where the voice has come from and says, "Why the bicycle riders?" And the voice comes back, "Why the Jews?" So, you know, there are Jews who have done things wrong. There are Jews I abhor. There are Jews. But the minute you put the Jews in front of it, then you are dealing in something that is a conspiracy theory and that is anti-Semitic.
Let's just try to delve down a little bit, because you say that what, as you as a real scholar of this, was quite challenged when you actually looked at contemporary anti-Semitism. What was it about the contemporary nature of this that so surprised you?
One of the things that surprised me, or the things that struck me, is the perfect storm nature of it right now. Usually in times past, we've had either anti-Semitism on the political right or on the political left. Today, we see it coming from three different sources, both the political right, and I would turn to the people, well, you mentioned the rally in Queensland. I would turn to the people, the rally in the United States in Charlottesville in the summer of 2017. I would look at some of the governments in East Central and Eastern Europe, Hungary, Poland, which are not overtly anti-Semitic, but have engaged, certainly in Hungary, engaged in anti-Semitic symbols and rhetoric.
And then there's, of course, Pittsburgh.
One cannot forget Pittsburgh, where the man, the shooter, even as he was being taken down by the police, was yelling, you know, "You Jews, whom I don't see as white, are not going to destroy us white people." And then on the left, I'm speaking to you from London right now, Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party. Certainly there are overt examples and strains of anti-Semitism. You see it in the left in certain attitudes towards Israel. And when I say that, and we can talk about this more, I'm not saying criticism of Israel is absolutely legitimate. You know, read the Israeli dailies, go to the Knesset debates, you'll hear criticism. But when you attribute everything, every wrong in a myopic way, not looking at anything else, to Israel, when that is the only problem you see, or you see that the cause of everything, then I would say about crossing the line into potentially an anti-Semitic.
Yeah, well, that's the whole question of, can you be anti-Semitic? Can you distinguish it from anti-Zionism? I mean, that's one question. And it seemed to me from reading your book that what had sort of taken your breath away a little bit was how people certainly didn't consider themselves anti-Semitic, but you, using your normal prism of judgment, said, yes, they are. They were tapping into something very, very deep and habitual in Western culture, before we get to the Muslim cultures, and they didn't even realize it. Am I characterizing that correctly?
That's correct. Or it's almost a sort of reflexive kind of thing. Give you an example. Here in London, in the House of Lords, this dame Judy Tong from the Liberal Democrats, so quite left progressive, she sees herself on the left of progressive. The blood was not even dry in Pittsburgh when she tweeted, I'm paraphrasing here, you know, that this is horrific. And the next sentence was, but when will Benjamin Netanyahu realize that his policy leads to horrible things? What happened in Pittsburgh had zero to do with Israel. In fact, this guy was coming from the far right. What upset him is that this synagogue had been supportive of an effort to help refugees, and a Jewish organization, which supports refugee resettlement and refugee aid all over the world, including in the United States. So there was that reflexive, this is all about Israel. And you see that repeatedly. So those kind of things make you wonder. When the criticism is about something else, when the discussion is about something else, immediately going to Israel. I think the problem on the left is people who consider themselves progressives, many of them see their view of the world is refracted through a prism which has two facets, an ethnic facet and a class facet. So that if you are, so to speak, brown, black, of color, using those terms just as code words, then you can be a victim of prejudice. Or if you are poor, disadvantage, you can be a victim of prejudice. But if you are neither, and they see Jews as white, and ironically, as I pointed out a moment ago, those on the far right do not see Jews as white, but they see Jews as white, and they consider all Jews to be privileged, though there are many Jews who are not. And they say, well, you could not possibly be a victim of prejudice. You have power, you have standing. Therefore, when you say something is anti-Semitic, you must have an excuse. You must be using it as subterfuge for something else.
There's a great phrase that Abby Wilkinson, who's a freelance journalist, talked about, that the idea that it's not really like other forms of bigotry because it involves kicking upwards, which is a very interesting, I think, terribly interesting idea. And that's the argument that Jeremy Corbyn is fundamental to his ideology, as you say, is to have sympathy for anyone who appears to be oppressed or an underdog. And so, but he's not deliberately trying to be anti-Semitic. So I suppose, what would you ask of him if he tries to follow through on an essential value that he has? How does he do it and make sure that he doesn't kick another group who've been down?
Right. Well, I don't know. He has shown over and over again an inability to really understand, an inability to recognize. There was an incident here with a mural painted on a building, which showed five men sitting around a big, oligarch, overstuffed, bursting out of their suits, smoking cigars. And of the characters, most of them were overtly Jewish-looking figures. Almost they could have come out of Der Stürmer, the Nazi, highly anti-Semitic propagandistic publication. And they're playing Monopoly, and the Monopoly board is being held up by oppressed workers bent over, backs bent over. And driving by, it was on the side of the building. If you had driven by at 80 miles an hour, how many kilometers that is, you could not help but notice this was anti-Semitic. So when the first criticism of it came up, his first comment was, no, freedom of artistic expression. And then later, when it was when people began to say, wait a minute, this isn't overtly, even the mayor of the area said this is overtly anti-Semitic, and he's often expressed questionable views in the past. Even he was against it. Then Jeremy Corbyn said, oh, I didn't really notice
it. Didn't see it. Look, I've just got to ask him. The other very interesting analysis you offer is what is happening in Eastern Europe. And just explain, if you would, how you think that history really is, I suppose, determining a certain take on the role of Jewish people going right back to World War II. It's very interesting, I think, your analysis of that.
Thank you. Well, we see it in some former Soviet bloc countries, former Soviet bloc countries, Poland, Hungary, Lithuania, where there's a form of what I call, well, certainly some of these countries, they're not engaging in Holocaust denial. These countries say, oh, the Holocaust happened. But what they're engaging in, we see it clearly in Poland with a law that was passed this past summer. What they're trying to do is repaint their role. We see
Deborah, do you mind if I interrupt? Because I knew that. It's what you say, that often these governments who are coming in are strongly anti-communist, and they're often the ideological and political heirs of the nationalist groups that collaborated with the Nazis during the war against the hated Soviet communists with whom the Jews were associated. Now, that sort of almost rebirth of very old affiliations.
That's right.
Very fresh take, I thought.
It is a fresh take. We've seen it during the communist era, even though the communists were persecuting Jews and Jews were fighting to get out of these countries. This kind of view was suppressed. But when these new nationalist governments took over with, as you point out, and as I argue in the book, with their almost neo-Nazi like roots, they were looking to rewrite this history. So if you go into Hungary and you go into a museum there that they have the House of Terror, you would not know that Hungarians, Hungarian gendarmes, Hungarian railroads, Hungarian individuals took active role in the genocide of the Jews. That's all whitewashed out because we want to present ourselves. We all were victims. I mean, they suffered. Certainly many of those countries suffered during the war, but many of them participated very actively in the genocide. So if you whitewash it out and then you say, oh, the Jews are trying to paint us as having been involved, you know, it becomes a new form of a new expression of anti-Semitism.
Just the emphasis on the nationalism too, I thought was... Look, finally, nevertheless, despite all this, you caution about putting too much emphasis on anti-Semitism, though, that the danger of making this the sole focus of Jewish concerns is that the entire Jewish experience, with all its wondrousness, is reduced in a way to wariness and to keeping your eyes open for anti-Semitism, which is a sort of reduction, isn't it?
Yes. My concern is the book is written, as you know, as a series of letters, to a Jewish student. She writes me, I answer back, and to a non-Jewish colleague. And we engage in this three-way conversation about anti-Semitism. I did it because I wanted to make the book accessible to people. I wanted to make people able to read it. I didn't want a dry academic tome. So I'm writing as a scholar and trying to step back and analyze and explain and make something incomprehensible comprehensible. But in the last segment, I step back and I say there's a danger. There's a danger to any group that's prejudiced, that is the victim of prejudice, that you make your suffering the leitmotif of your existence, the raison d'etre, fighting the oppression, becomes the reason for your existence. And when you do that, you cede to the oppressor control over your identity, and you lose all the positive. And Lord knows, Jews have a great deal to be proud of and a great deal to treasure, and a culture that goes back millennia, and much to rejoice in. And it shouldn't be the suffering that drives you and the oppression that drives you, though you have to fight it and you have to talk about it and you have to try to eradicate it. But what should drive your identity as a Jew, it should not be the oppression, but despite the oppression, despite the hostility, despite the animosity, I am proud in who I am because of all we are, all we've given to the world, and this culture that we have.
Deborah Lipstadt, terrific to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
And Deborah is a Doro Professor of Modern Jewish History and Holocaust Studies at Emory University. Her latest book is Anti-Semitism Here and Now. It's published by Scribe, LIPSTADT. And look, there was a terrific big idea this week. Why do people believe in conspiracy theories? And it does relate to what we've been talking to. So you might like to go to our website and you get it and get a and hear that. It was really good. Well, coming up, words like highbrow, cerebral, academic, do they all go together in your mind when you're thinking about book buying? And it's really a way of saying, does academic publishing have a future in Australia? That's coming up next.